Well, it's not just Friday. It's follow-up Friday when we delve a little deeper into some lingering tidbits from the past week. This is Andrea Bernstein, in for Brian Lehrer. Let's start with one lingering tidbit. Remember the 2008 election? Yeah, that was last week. Well, guess what? In Georgia, Minnesota, and Alaska, the 2008 election lives on. So let's get an update on where things stand from Jonathan Allen, reporter for Congressional Quarterly at CQPolitics.com. John, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
So the big story today has to be the Alaska recount, where it initially looked like Ted Stevens, the felon, was going to win re-election, but now Democrat Mark Bevish has pulled ahead. What's going on there?
Mark Begich is 814 votes ahead of the convicted felon. I don't know if that's good news or bad news. You'd probably want a larger margin if you were Begich. What we've got going on there is there are still votes being counted originally. We're not even at a recount stage yet. The Begich campaign estimates that there are as many as 40,000 votes out there, both absentee and those that were held in question on Election Day, that still need to be counted before a recount can even occur under Alaska law. Only a tie triggers an automatic recount, but the losing candidate can request a recount if the margin is within, basically 0.5%.
Now, what is going on in Alaska? I mean, I know it's a large state, big rural areas, far flung, but, you know, Todd Palin could have brought those ballots in on his snowmobile by now. So why is it taking them so long?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think that the far-flung nature of Alaska is sort of part of the problem here. But this is generally a problem. I mean, trying to count absentee ballots, you've got military overseas ballots still coming in. I mean, I just think that there are a lot of logistical issues. And then, of course, those ballots held in reserve on Election Day. I think it just takes a long time to count. And this isn't entirely unusual. I mean, we see this fairly frequently from election cycle to election cycle, regardless of the state, that sometimes it takes a little while to count the ballots.
Jonathan Allen of Congressional Quarterly is joining us from, I think, what sounds like Capitol Hill. Sounds like you're in a large rotunda, if I have that right. Do you have a question about an outstanding race? Give us a call at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Now, Jonathan Allen, do we know anything about where these votes are still to come in from? Is there anything that would indicate which way this election might go? And how many are there?
I do not think that there's a real indication at this point of how the election's going to end up. The Begich campaign is estimating as many as 40,000 votes still out there to be counted. And, of course, a recount will almost invariably change the numbers a little bit, if not the result of the original count. And it looks likely that there will be a recount in Alaska.
And now the initial count has to be completed by when? November 19th, is that right?
I believe that they're not going to certify those results until the first week of December. But yeah, I think you're right that November 19th is that date.
So we have a long time yet for Alaska. Maybe,
yes.
Maybe Sarah Palin can step in and show us some of her vaunted efficiency.
Catherine Harris of 2008.
Now let's take a call. Mort from Oceanside. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi. My question is, I don't hear anything about what happened to the Al Franken race.
All right. My very next question. What's going on in Minnesota?
Well, you've got a 206-vote separation there. They are already moving toward a recount, which is scheduled to begin next week. It's anybody's guess as to what happens with that recount.
Okay, so the
206 votes is not the kind of separation that would necessarily mean that the result couldn't be overturned by recount. You could certainly see more than that number of votes flip.
Okay, so just to clarify, the incumbent in that race is Republican Norm Coleman. The challenger is Al Franken. Gail Collins had a very funny column in yesterday's New York Times when she said Al Franken probably learned in this election that coming from a profession where writing an article called Pornorama in Playboy was maybe not a great idea. But what is happening in that race? Because Obama won Minnesota pretty handily, right?
That's right. Well, I think there are a couple things at play here. Number one, Norm Coleman has always been seen as and has portrayed himself as somewhat independent. He used to be a Democrat, then became a Republican, then ran for the Senate. And so I think that's part of what's going on here. He was probably able to separate himself from President Bush a little better than other candidates around the country. I think that the point that you bring up about Al Franken had something to do with it. I think another Democratic candidate might have done better than Al Franken. He was certainly able to raise a lot of money, but there were questions about whether Minnesotans wanted to send a comedian to Congress. These are pretty serious times, and I think what saved Al Franken a little bit is that he presented a fairly serious agenda despite all the knocks about him being a comedian, about some of the things he had written in the past that might not seem so senatorial. He was able to present an agenda that was very serious.
Now, just to clarify, the 206 vote margin, is that a final but unofficial count, or what is that?
That is, I believe, the final count. They're moving again toward a recount next week, so they should be done. That should be the frozen amount from which they start at the recount.
212-433-9692 is the phone number. 212-433-WNYC. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehr on the phone with Jonathan Allen of Congressional Quarterly. We're talking about races from last week's. Can you believe it was just last week's election that have not yet been decided? Jacob from Englewood, New Jersey. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a question about, I guess, sort of a worst-case scenario, since it's not these recounts that go on for quite some time. What happens if these aren't completed by the time the new Congress is supposed to be sworn in? Is there some sort of a contingency plan?
Jonathan?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, the question was, what happens if they're not counted by January, if this is still up in the air?
I think that they will be counted by January. I don't think it will be up in the air at that point. But the terms of the existing senators cannot be extended. So those states, if they were not able to send somebody to the Senate, would not have representation at that point.
Thank you for your call, Jacob. Now, the other one out there, of course, is Georgia, where there is actually people are going to have to go and vote again. The incumbent Republican, Saxby Chambliss, is facing a challenge from Jim Martin. Saxby Chambliss got more votes, but he didn't get over 50%. So there's going to be a runoff. How is that race shaping up? That's coming up December 2nd, right?
That's right. And here you've got a situation where Democrats were able to essentially take advantage of the rules in Georgia, which has a runoff system, and so therefore, as you point out, the sitting set or the winner, so to speak, has to get 50% in order to avoid a runoff. There were three candidates in this race. A Libertarian candidate got nearly 4% of the vote, thus denying the leading candidate, Saxby Chambliss, from getting that 50%. Now what you're seeing is the national political parties descending on Georgia. The National Republican Senatorial Committee and the Democratic Senatorial Committee are both down there trying to work as hard as they can on this one seat, which is the one remaining place where you can campaign. I mean, with the other recounts that you have going on, you're not going to have new votes added, but there will be a runoff on December 2nd in Georgia between Chambliss and his Democratic challenger, Jim Martin. I think that Saxby Chambliss is hoping that a lot of the voters for the Libertarian were Republicans who were angry at him and wanted to send a message and maybe didn't realize that he was in trouble. The Democrats look at the history of runoff elections, and I think they are emboldened by the idea that, generally speaking, if an incumbent is forced into a runoff, that is bad news for them because it means a majority of the people didn't want to see them come back.
On the other hand, clearly there was a huge Obama effect in Georgia. I mean, the race was, you know, McCain won Georgia, but he won by something like, I think, 5 points compared to, you know, 15 points for the Republicans is around the usual majority there. And there were people online for 5 hours for early voting. I mean, can the Democrats reproduce that enthusiasm? I mean, you know, for their down ticket candidate?
I think one of the questions we may get an answer to early on that I think we were going to have to wait until 2010 to find out is whether voters who showed up for Obama will be willing to show up for other Democratic candidates, other candidates he supports, without him at the top of the ticket. And I think in particular, you'll look at the African-American community who showed up in big numbers in a lot of southern states to see whether they're willing to show up again for this runoff election that does not have Barack Obama on the ballot.
The Democrats are still waiting to find out if they get to 60, the magic filibuster-proof majority. What do you think the likelihood of that is? And does it really matter? I mean, could you see a new politics where, you know, it isn't just sort of Democrats versus Republicans and the Democrats just have to win by sheer brawn?
I would argue that it doesn't really matter that much, that once you get to 57, 58, 59 seats, having 60 really doesn't matter that much. And the reason is because the Senate acts as a moving coalition on different issues. You have to build a new coalition on each issue. And on almost any issue, the Democrats will be able to find one or two or three Republicans who want to vote with them, you know, whether it's stem cells or expanding the state children's health insurance program or even the middle class tax cuts that Senator Obama has talked about. So I think what you're going to see is a lot of Republicans or at least a handful of Republicans crossing on any given issue. The other thing to remember is a lot of what is going to be done can be done through the budget reconciliation process. And without getting to be too much of a wonk, budget bills have some protections from the filibuster, and that allows the administration, in concert with the Democratic Congress, to move a lot of what it wants without hitting that 60-vote threshold.
Right.
So there are a lot of reasons to think that 60 votes is kind of an artificial idea.
On that wonky note, Jonathan Allen, reporter for the Congressional for CQPolitics.com, thanks so much for joining us. Now for another follow-up. Yesterday on the show, we asked listeners what they did while they were waiting for their computers to boot up. We got lots of interesting answers. Make coffee, change my kids' diapers, listen to WNYC. But we also got this comment from Dan in White Plains, who said, I don't turn it off. I run the Berkeley Open Interface Networking client to donate my processing power to disease research and would encourage anyone to do so to avoid annoyingly long boot ups by doing the same. Susan from Yorktown Heights wrote, we do leave our computer on all night. We've registered with the World Community Grit. It's a simple way to support scientists eager to advance their humanitarian research. They use the unused cycles of your computer to provide more computing power to researchers. What is this? To find out, we're talking to John Abel, New York Bureau Chief for Wired.com. John, welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thanks very much.
What are we talking about here?
Well, there are the Berkeley Open Infrastructure of Network Computing is a gathering of a number of projects that are assisted greatly by the ability of people to basically crunch numbers using their own computers. So you embrace the crowd, as it were. And there's no cost to you as the computer user, and it actually only works when you're not using the computer yourself.
No security disadvantage to this?
Not really. No, you can keep your firewall up and just permit this sort of work to be done. And of course, you're working with an entity like Berkeley that you trust. So. And you trust them.
And what about the power that you're using?
Well, you're using whatever you've got, and it doesn't really matter because all you're doing really is using whatever computational power you've got, which could be a 10-year-old machine, to do math, essentially. The reason that it works so well is that you can take a million of those and have them do the work that a very large, expensive single computer would have to do.
All right. So if you are doing this, and is your computer in sleep mode or is it using full power?
It is using full power, and it is running as you would run a screensaver. So you install a program, and it runs instead of your screensaver. So instead of seeing flying toasters, you'll be helping to find a cure for AIDS.
All right. Thank you. Quickly, one last question. One of the more well-known of these computing grids is SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Project, where they have computers all over the planet searching for signs of otherworldly life. Very quickly, you know if that's made any progress?
If progress is defined by finding an alien, the answer is no.
Right. On that note, thanks very much, John Abel, New York Bureau Chief for Wired.com. Thanks for joining us on Follow-Up Friday. By the way, we've provided a link to Wikipedia's list of grid computing projects on our website. If people want to get involved, you can also go to our comments page and tell us what you have your computer doing in its downtime. Go to WNYC.org and click on the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Andrea Bernstein, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. He'll be back Monday. Have a great weekend.